Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to the Kitchen Garden Magazine podcast, your fortnightly fix of gardening features, advice and chat. Subscribe and follow us now to never miss an episode.
Hello, and welcome to On the Grapevine, with me, your host, Daniel Hayes, and my guest today, Joe Swift. Joe is a garden designer, author, and TV presenter, making regular appearances on BBC Gardeners World and anchoring RHS flower shows from the likes of Chelsea, Hampton Court, and Tatton Park. He drops in today to chat about his fantastic new collection of books, Joe's Expert Garden Guides, ranging from the edible garden, indoor garden, nature gardens, modern spaces and small gardens.
Hi.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Not bad. How are you?
Oh, I'm getting there. Getting there. I'm just finishing off one of those very nice chocolate caramel sweets. So.
Oh. Oh, thanks. Thanks for offering me one.
I've got one left, Joe. I can do the...
Go on.
There you go. Magic. The magic of modern technology, eh?
There you go.
So, Joe, thank you for joining us. To my left here, and I have demirrored the screen so that otherwise when I show you books, they don't read backwards, as I found earlier.
Okay.
But it's been a bit of a break since your last books came out, Joe. I think I counted... going by when they're published, you're looking at a good 12, 13 years.
Yes.
And then like a good footballer or a good striker, you then hit us with a deluge of them as well.
That's right. Exactly. It's like a renaissance. They're very they're very different, these books. In the past, I did an allotment book before, and I've done a sort of couple of designer, sort of more coffee table type books. Whereas these are more... they're sort of inspirational and practical, hopefully, at the same time. I think they're a bit more practical. They're a bit more, okay, you know, I've just got into gardening, or I've, you know, started a few years ago, but I want to get a bit more knowledge, or I've just got this garden, or I just want to start growing some indoor plants, or I want to encourage wildlife into the garden, whatever it might be. So I'm just hoping they're really accessible. The publishers have been great. They just said, look, you know, inspire people, but we want practical information. We want people to be able to pick it up, you know, look at it, think, yeah, that looks great. How do I do it? Okay. And, you know, having started off as a landscaper in this business and then gone on to be a garden designer, and having seen and spoken to thousands of gardeners over the years of all different experiences, I think I know the sort of common pitfalls and try and sort of steer people in the right direction. Really, and that's what's in these books. Yeah,
I can definitely agree with you there, because that's exactly what I am. I've been a gardener landscaper for 35 years now, so we very kind of similar, not quite as I think you've done more impressive gardens than I might have created, Joe. Let's start. I mean, here's the first one I found, the small garden, which I believe has got pictures of your own garden in it as well, Joe. Did I notice
that's my own back garden, mate? It's changed. It changes. That was actually a few years ago. It changed every year. I do something different out there, but it sort of charted my life from being a, you know, a gardener and then having kids as well. So it had to be a practical space. It's only a small garden. And also, you know, dealing with things like privacy in the city, and, you know, looking out the back from the kitchen, you know, all year round onto this garden, how to layer up the planting. But, you know, it's got to be a versatile space. And people are like, oh, I've only got a tiny garden. I can't do much with it. But actually, you can do a lot. There's an amazing amount that you can do with it. But the few, you know, I want to try and guide people in the right direction before they say, okay, well, I'm going to put the seating area over here. I'm going to put the planting area over there. And then, you know, a few years down the line, a lot of people are ringing me up and going, oh, I've done, you know, I spent 10 years on this garden and I still don't like it. And you think, well, you'd spent 10 years on your bathroom or your kitchen, it'd be the most amazing kitchen and bathroom in the world. But it's just about, you know, getting a bit of knowledge, having a go, and then feeling like you're going in the right direction and going with it to a degree, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I often tell customers, you've got to live with it. The first thing it's always been told to me, you've got to live with your garden for a year. Because you don't know, there might be some fabulous plants, but not all plants show their face all the year round, let's be honest.
No, that's true. That's absolutely true. But some people are a bit impatient. I want to get stuck in. But also the whole orientation, you know, you end up, you know, the sun, you know, well, I actually like sitting in the shade. I avoid the direct sun.
Yeah, same as me.
The way you gravitate towards certain areas of your garden. I'm redesigning one at the moment where on the lawn, they've just chucked a load of sort of furniture because that just catches the evening sun. So it's like, okay, you know, they've been doing that for years. They've had this garden for years, but okay, well, that's the obvious place to put a seating area. They go, yeah, we feel nice and secluded here. We've got views out. It just catches the last couple of hours of the sun in the summer. Brilliant, because they've experienced, but you're absolutely right. Yeah. To know that plot, and every garden is different. Every plot is different.
Yeah. And interestingly, the sun is a very important part of any garden design, because that's the one thing, global warming, et cetera, all these things that seem to affect us nowadays. The one thing that won't change is the sun and where it is at certain times of the year. That's something we probably can't affect, to be honest. And as you say, yeah, and as you're talking about seating areas, yeah, so most people want that. Oh, we've got this funny little bit over there. Well, that's just where the sun, we like to sit there in the summer when it's gone down. And I'm like you, I don't, even though I've worked in the thing for the last 35 years, I really don't like sitting in the, people often say to me a weekend, why are you sat there in that corner? I don't really want to sit in the sun, thank you very much. I have English skin, it tends to go red. Yeah. And then it will kind of go a brown colour, but it generally just kind of just goes red and burnt.
No, absolutely no. I mean, that's why I wear a hat. You know, for years, it was like, oh, don't wear a hat on the telly, you can't see your eyes. I'm like, well, I always wear a hat normally because, I don't know if you noticed, I haven't got much hair.
Well, I think you've done your hair very nicely today, Joe.
I actually had something chopped out here, you know, a basal cell carcinoma, precancerous cell. So it's something we've got to be careful of, just, you know, getting out there. You know, there's the Watch Your Back campaign as well for you know, people who are, you know, taking their shirt off, doing a lot of gardening and getting burnt. It's not brilliant for one's skin, and especially my lovely soft fair skin.
Your lovely soft English skin there. To be honest, do you know, I've never been a gardener who particularly has taken his shirt off in people's gardens, because I don't think he's particularly. I mean, if we all look like Brad Pitt, maybe customers would be employing you for that, but I don't. And as I say, but
nor do I.
Yeah, and what people forget about the sun is it tires you out. You sit under the sun, beaming sun all day long. By about 1-2 o'clock, you'll find that you're all kind of that kind of verve you start with first thing in the morning is long gone, and all you really want is a cold drink and to go home. Yeah. Quite simple.
No, give me a bit of dapple shade. I love a bit of dapple shade is my favourite. With a bit of light breeze.
Yeah. And also, I think your hat is a bit of your trademark, man. You could say you're
He's got
his dogs. Adam's got his cat, and you've got your hat.
And I've got my hat, and I don't have to feed it anything at all. I don't have to take it for a walk.
No,
I know. No, it's true. But the hat just became a necessity. Yeah. You know, when you're filming in the sun and you're gardening in the sun and you're out, you got to wear a hat.
Do you have a particular hat maker you prefer?
I have a lovely guy who he's the most environmentally friendly, sustainable hats in the world. Yeah. I think I might be able to reach it.
Oh, here we go. This is what we want.
Yeah, they're
there it is.
Oh.
I don't know whether that will work with headphones.
They don't really go on with it. Look.
No.
It really
works. It's a look.
They're called Pachacuti. They're called Pachacuti, and he's great. He goes over to Ecuador. And, you know, there's a women's cooperative who makes them, and he knows exactly where the material's coming from. He sourced it right back to the beginning. Yeah. And his wife is is a massive sort of environmentalist in the fashion industry, and always campaigning for employees' rights and everything. So it's they're really good hats, and yeah, and so I've got a bit of a thing going. Yeah, every year at Chelsea we meet up and chew the fat.
Yeah. Well, they look very nice. They look very comfy, and they do the job, which has got to be the main thing of any kind of piece of clothing, I suppose you could say.
Yeah. That's true. That's true.
There's no point wearing something that's uncomfortable and you don't like it, doesn't do the job. Well, there's a certain point. There's no point doing it.
that's very good advice.
Well, I do have some bits of advice. I've forgotten most important things, to be honest, but that's just getting old, I think. Right. Well, your next book, we've looked at your small garden. Your next book, Indoor Green, which is obviously indoor. Now, I have placed a couple of little plants just behind me under in direction from my wife, admittedly.
Well, some of them are cut flowers, I'll be honest with you.
Well, they are, yes.
Oh, the lovely orchid. Orchids are such great value, though. I'm always buying an orchid now rather than, you know, rather than a bunch of flowers.
If I go and visit someone.
Yeah, and my mum is brilliant at getting them back into flower as well. And they last for a long time. And, you know, then in M&S or something, about a tenner or 15 quid.
If even that.
Yeah, they're really good. The whole indoor plant thing is massive at the moment. I start the book by saying I remember when I was a kid in the 70s, you know, under this big cheese plant in our living room, you know, pretending that I was sort of in the tropics. But now, and then they went really out of fashion. But now, because a lot of people haven't got a garden of their own at all, they've only got an indoor space, or they're renting somewhere, they want to take all their plants with them and they build up a nice collection. We've got a lot of houseplants. My missus has gone a bit sort of houseplant mad, which is great because I love it. Houseplants are back. And like I say, they're sort of flexible. You can put them in pretty much, you know, any room in the house. Minimal care. That's the thing. I think people over pamper their houseplants, which can kill them. I mean, the most common form of killing a houseplant is overwatering it.
I think that's what the book's lovely about. I see you're full of lovely pictures and things, but it gives you those little bits. They need to be treated slightly differently to an outdoor plant because it is a false. And obviously, most houses have central heating, which isn't particularly good because it sucks all the moisture out of the air. Yeah. But I have flipped through it. It's very good. It gives you those nice, subtle, those kind of little building blocks that you need that almost work for anything. Because as you were saying about orchids, you don't really need to throw them away. Once they finish flowering, you just need a little bit of knowledge. And as you say, they will keep flowering and keep
showing up. They'll come back again.
Yeah, this is it, which is very good. But no, it's a good book. Yeah, I think it's good. Yeah, even people like me, I mean, I might know a bit about outside garden plants, but indoor plants, doesn't matter what type. You could be the greatest garden on the planet, but you can take yourself out of your comfort zone and
And actually, that's the one I had to do most research for because, you know, the Latin, you know, peace lily, what's the Latin name and all that sort of stuff. But the idea is that, you know, it's for people just getting into it who might have one or two houseplants or their daughter or their nephew or their niece. It's just, you know, they go around the house. And then $9.99, these books, I was really adamant. I was like, look, I've done coffee table books for 20, 30, 40 quid. You know, I don't want them to be so precious. I want them to be something that you can have in the car or the van. You know, we used to always have like the RHS encyclopedia in the van. And you could just have a quick look up. Okay, how do I do a bit of, you know, lawn aeration, or what compost am I using for this, or how do I prune that? And some really basic stuff to just sort of easy accessible. Pick up, have a go at something. And you know, as you know, with gardening, it's all about having a go. And we learn through our successes and failures. And we all have failures. You know, we all have. Yes. And I think that's the great thing about Monty is, well, Monty obviously has more failures than most. No, I'm joking. But he talks about them honestly on the telly. Yeah. And I think that's because, you know, it's the only way we're going to learn. And the only way you learn from gardening is by starting somewhere, having a go, see where you end up, and enjoy it. Enjoy the play. And don't do stuff if you really hate it. There's always another way around.
Well, no, gardening is meant to be, it's a hobby, some people would call, but it's meant to be enjoyable. And I think Monty's carried on the tradition from Jeff Hamilton, because he was always quite happy to show you, but an absolute pig's ear or something came out of, oh, well, we'll try again next year. And sometimes, certainly with vegetable growing, sometimes, I remember one year I had to do three lots of sowing to carrots to finally get some carrots to come out. And yet the following year, and parsnips are a classic. Sometimes they just don't want to come up, and you're like,
yeah, they just
what am I doing wrong? I'm doing nothing different to what I normally do, but just some years might be bad seeds, but you just kind of, what do you do?
Yeah, no, but exactly. But that's what worries me, is that people have a go, and then they, you know, it's like, oh, I've killed this house plant, or I planted some bulbs up and the squirrels chewed them, and, you know, and then, and it puts them off. And it's just one of those things, you know, the more you put in, the more you get out of it. Yeah. And, you know, I love it, and have done it all my life. I mean, you know, like you, and still, when I'm not working, I'm not designing someone's garden or, you know, filming or whatever, I'm trying to do a bit of gardening myself.
That's exactly what I'm doing today. I've got a rare day off from the day job.
Oh, lovely.
And I'm going to go and cut my lawn, and a lot of my I brought a big bag of daffodils the end of last year from the local garden club, and they're all flying up. I'm not quite sure what you're there exactly what the label said, but that'd be fine. They're all off the borders. Yeah.
Well, it's like I've got Columbia Road Market down the road from me, which is a flower market. I sell live plants. And I remember going there years ago, and they had all these rhododendrons, you know, for sale. And, you know, and none of them were. I said, what colour are these? Oh, they're all mixed. It's like, great. They're only about a fiver each, so it's like take a punt on it, you know.
Well, yeah, and sometimes that's quite nice. I mean, sometimes if I do a garden, I'll put some bulbs in or something. I won't actually tell the customer, and then you'll go back maybe 6 months, a year later, a year and a half later, and say, "Oh, thank you for that. Did you put them in?" You're kind of like, "Yeah, I did put them in, but I just didn't tell you, just to give you a little bit of a surprise." Because I often think things like bulbs and things like that are probably underused. Most people think bulbs, I think snowdrops and daffodils, and there's so many more bulbs out there, summer and winter.
Yeah. Camassia. I do like bulbs that cut, you know, alliums and camassias I've been using more and more, because they come back, and they're just so impressive, and they fill that sort of gap, you know, sort of in spring when things, all the perennials and the grasses are coming through, but they just fill that gap, and they can be very elegant as well, you know, whites and light blues and all that sort of, they just look great. Yeah.
Which kind of brings us on very nicely, Joe, to your modern space garden, which, as you say, is a kind of using, there you go, there's some people watching, as I say, full of lovely flowers. What I like about them, Joe, is they're very concise, they're punchy, they get to the point, you don't spend too long. Like, there's a little bit later on, the doing your own veg, the no-dig bit. You talk about it, and if people are interested, I often say, if I write local articles for the local magazines, you can't tell everyone everything in a book that's trying to cover such a broad show. But if you're interested, and you obviously, I've spoken to Charles Dowden before, fascinating.
Yeah,
he can fill a, he could probably fill all five books about no-dig.
Oh, and this exactly. Totally, and he is the legend of no dig. But it's just it's a lot of taste, people who have got into no dig, you know, absolutely swear by it. I've done a little bit of it myself, but yeah, it's just to give people a little taste. And if you want to explore, you know, there's a lot going on. I don't want to just be like, okay, here's how to grow all these vegetables. It's like there are, you know, there's different ways of doing things. There's the no dig thing out there. You might grow an allotment, you might grow in your garden, you might just grow in containers. A lot of people are just growing a load of edibles, and you might just want some herbs or whatever it might be. But obviously, you know, if people are really going to get into it, they're going to go and explore further.
Yeah.
But hopefully it will help start that sort of interest and that passion, and give enough information for people to get going, really. Mm.
This is it. And the modern garden, as you say, you talk about a lot of plants in it as well, but it's actually using structures of things to create. They can be very important things because they're permanent in some ways, but they're very important to kind of the overall structure of your garden. Plants can sometimes be, I mean, some you would never, if you went there in the winter, you'd think, what's a bit of, well, allotments is a classic version. You'd think, there's nothing here, what are you talking about? Come give it 4 or 5 months, suddenly. Well, look at Monty's garden some of the time, some parts of his garden.
Yeah.
As you say, there's 6 foot towering monsters and cannas appearing and things like that. But you wouldn't, if you didn't know gardening, you'd just think, a bit of a boring area, isn't it? But I think that's what I like about
the modern garden is also the way we use plants, and it's it embraces the new perennial movement as well, because it's about thinking sort of big brush strokes with plants. You know, it's not just, oh, I'm in this little corner here and I'm doing a thing. You know, so it's about, you know, maybe looking out the back of the house and having a contemporary space, and a contemporary garden is really, it's just an updating of a lot of, you know, gardening traditions, but it's also combining design, and it doesn't have to be a small space. I talk about, you know, bringing in the view of an extended landscape, and how to work with that, as well as how to frame a view, and how maybe to internalize it if you haven't got a beautiful view and you've just got, you know, a bit of an eyesore beyond, how to help screen it but still create. Contemporary gardens also about sort of modern living. You know, people want so much out of their gardens these days. They want to be able to entertain. They want to do a bit of yoga. They want the dog out there. They want to have a bit of a garden. They want it to look great. They don't want to do a huge amount of work. So I talk about things like robot mowers and irrigation systems and stuff. Yeah. And there are ways of creating very high impact with not so much work, but it is where design really comes into its fore, I think. And there was a period years ago when it was all so minimal. You know, I'm guilty. You know, I designed a lot of gardens with just a few plants and a hell of a lot of paving, and they look terrible. You know, I mean, they honestly, it just doesn't work. But now we also want to embrace wildlife and nature and all that within our modern gardens, and it can all happen. It can all work, and it doesn't mean that you've just got to be out there gardening it all day, every day. It's embracing plants in their decay through the winter, and the skeleton of, you know, some trees and interesting bark, and looking at it in a different way as well.
I love hibiscus. It takes forever. It doesn't normally show any leaves until it's got above 75. It's not interested at all. And then all of a sudden, bang. But I think it's a lovely architectural plant, just the little knobbly twigs and that. I just think it's wonderful. But as you say, a lot of people will be like, I think it's dead. You're like, no, it's just a hibiscus. It's just doesn't
matter. No, but and you've got to appreciate the moment in gardening. You know, it's like outside my house here, there's a street tree. We've got there's a lovely almond just coming in. You know, they've got Hackney's done an amazing job with the street trees over the years, and it flowers for about 2 days.
Yeah,
you know? But it just looks, and you've just got to grasp that moment. And when it flowers, you've just got to appreciate it. Wow, that is stunning. Because I know everyone wants long flowering, it's got to go on forever and all this sort of stuff. But sometimes there are plants in your garden that you've just got to appreciate when they're there, and they might not be there that long.
Yeah, I've got a couple of standard camellias outside my front door. But we all know what will happen. They'll come out and then you'll get a little ground frost and then they'll be gone. But
And that'll be it.
And it does the wonderful evergreen flowers all spring, summer, and in the autumn as well. It doesn't exist, because if it did, there'd be a very rich person on the planet who's invented that magic plant. But I often have to explain to people that evergreen plants need to keep themselves in leaf all year long. They can't be the most if you want fantastic flowers, you're going to have to buy things that are perennial or deciduous, because they can't physically. You're asking a plant to do a hell of a lot of work through all seasons, and it doesn't exist. If it did, we would know about it, but it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. But there are plants that, you know, that do have interesting bark or twigs or autumn cut, you know. Yeah, to see, I mean, you know, there are a lot of them in the book. They're sort of they're plants, but they're plants that you see a lot of designers, top designer, you know, Tom Shutt Smith and Dan Pearson and those guys, you know, you start looking at their palette of plants, you're thinking, you're using that because it adds so much. It really, there's more than one season of interest, or it's got a lot going for, you know, whatever it might be. And you know, there's so many plants out there. I think for the novice gardener, it just becomes overwhelming. You know, where do you start? Mm. All these Latin names. And I think there's something like 25,000 plants on sale at any time in the UK. Yeah. You know, and we don't know.
And often they're subspecies of there's many a thing. Like, I'm obviously, I don't think I live that far from you. I'm just up the M3 in Hampshire. And box blight is terrible around here. Both. Yeah. The caterpillar and obviously the fungal infection. So I started using Eunonymous.
I just What, the Gene Hughes? Is that you want them as Gene?
Gene Hughes, yeah, they're very similar. Gene Hughes or Green Spire, they're very similar.
Okay, yeah,
you'd
yeah.
have to know, you'd have to know your plants, really know your plants. But they're yeah, both, they do so, a yeah. wonderful thing. And as you say, and the problem is with round here is box is not going to, it doesn't kill it, but it's a, you're fighting a battle that you're never going to win in every single year.
Yeah.
And you can get the sprays, but it's just, and now a lot of people, you say anonymous and they think of obviously the bigger shrubs and they think, oh,
yeah.
But then if I want that, then you've got to explain to them that in all species of plants, there's little subsections and people have bred them. And as you say, you might look at it and think, I don't know what that is. And then someone gives you his Latin name or for instance, you're like, really? But that's yeah. the thing I think confuses a lot of people.
It is confusing. And that's why I just hate the idea that puts people off at all, having a go and getting into it. No, I used that Euonymus Gene Hughes recently on a job where, because yeah, you talk to a nurseryman and I'm like, it's box. And they're just like, nah, don't even go there with box.
A lot won't sell them. I'm the few of them around here won't. They actually have said, unless you specifically want it, we do not keep it in stock and we would rather not sell it to you. It's just, and it is an area thing. I mean, if you're kind of up north, Manchester, Lake District sort of way, or maybe over kind of Lincolnshire, you may well be fine. But I imagine, like most things, pathogens, shall we call them, they spread.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Brings us nicely onto your next book here, Joe, The Nature Garden.
Yeah, well, you know, Nature Garden, I mean, wildlife and nature, it's, you know, our gardens are such an incredible resource and it's our responsibility, really. But you know what, it's just a win-win situation because if you make a garden feel alive, it's full of bees and butterflies and birds, it just turns it into a completely sort of immersive experience rather than just, oh, I'm growing, oh, look what I'm growing, it looks great. Da, 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 da. You need to have the sounds and the movement and it's so easy to do. You know, it's about gardening techniques, about, you know, having a hierarchy of plants and having a few trees in a small garden, even in a small garden, letting the leaves, you know, leaving them on the ground a little bit longer and you end up, you know, with something that's going to come and eat something else, basically. You know, you want predators that are going to come in and predate on something, a little bit of water, fantastic. And I absolutely, maybe it's my age, but, you know, I think I just love the wildlife in the garden and see it. It's their garden as much as it's mine.
Yeah, and I think you need to, I've written about it before, you need to sometimes enjoy your garden. Your garden is there to enjoy, not to be a slight, oh, I need to do that. And I'm quite lucky where I'm a bit rural here, but yeah. There are some cockerels up the road, which sometimes can wake you rather early than you'd want. But I'm just sometimes sitting listening to the birds. And it doesn't act, you could be, as you say, in the kind of middle of London or anywhere you want, but they are there. And if you just close your mind a bit, and I think that's maybe what the pandemic did to a lot of people found.
They
appreciated actually the little things that, as you say, the birds are singing. Oh, well, that's a good sign. As you say, when you can't hear birds and things, you start wondering either there's a big storm coming. Because they're nature's incredibly in tune with, as I say, when you're talking about weather, I mean, you can get, there's a little kind of, I think it's probably from Australia or something. It obviously sucks in moisture, but it kind of raises and drops down. It tells you when bad weather, it's almost a predictor. They're amazing little things. But I think people need to understand that nature is probably better at telling you what's going to be happening in your local area than anything. They are far more in tune to it. And I think, as humans, we probably need to learn a bit from that, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right about the pandemic. I think it's sort of everyone stopped a little bit more and started appreciating, the street trees and the parks around them and the views and just looking out the window and slowing down. And that's what, you know, that's what gardening is about, as much as anything.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I was speaking to one of your colleagues, Adam Frost, the other day.
Yeah.
And he said what he's realised from it is actually he needs to, I suppose when you're like we are, you kind of work for yourself quite simply, but we're all self-employed to a certain extent. You don't need to say yes to everything. It's not going to vanish overnight, probably. Yeah. And sometimes you actually need to actually stop and enjoy the job. Otherwise, because I've always said some of the most knowledgeable people I've ever met in the gardening world are not actually supposed paid experts. It's actually keen amateurs because they love what they do. And they have the enjoyment for it, and that's it. Whereas sometimes if you're paid to do something, you can become a little bit grizzled and kind of, again.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, no, it's nice. Yeah, and appreciating and having time to spend in your own garden, and yeah, but it's funny. I mean, I still love doing things in my garden. I still find it an escape, even though you know I'm designing and I'm writing and I'm filming and always talking about the garden. But when I'm actually sort of say pruning something or digging or planting, or I still find it still takes me away, you know. And that's the other thing. I mean, the mental health side, you know, during lockdown. But you know, I think gardeners have always known how good it is for our well-being and mental health and all that sort of stuff. And it's great that that is now widened out and it's been generally accepted as being something. You know, I mean, even the NHS, you know, prescribe it sometimes to get outdoors, you know, connect with nature, do a bit of gardening. You know, and combined with lockdown and COVID and everything, it's incredibly. I mean, I couldn't live without it, and I think that's why people have got into it more and more. And you know, you don't, like I say, you don't have to have a garden. You can grow indoor plants, or you can have an allotment, or be part of a community garden, or become a volunteer. You know, for the National Trust or whatever it is. There's always a way.
There's something for every
garden. There is something. There's totally something for
it. This is it. Yeah. And that brings us on beautifully, Joe. To your final one, close to my heart as well. The edible garden. After all these years, I've moved house last year and I've now got my allotment in my garden, which is lovely.
Oh, wow.
Because I can come home and I can just do nothing sometimes, but I can just sit there and flick a few things and that, but it's wonderful.
Yeah. And then say, but also when you want to pick something and cook it, it's just right outside your back door.
The wastage, I must admit, the wastage, the bits I didn't have a chance to, my allotment wasn't very far away. But the fact you've got to get on your bike, get in the van, drive down there, unlock all the gates to get through.
Yeah.
It really cut. And you actually realise that, as you say, even just a small pot, you can grow quite a lot of carrots in a 10-litre pot. I mean, if you choose the right carrots, obviously, you don't want any big main crops, but you can use the lovely Chardonnay earlies. You can grow masses of them, and it'll keep, we're a family of four, but it keeps us fed.
Yeah.
Can't grow everything, but...
No, exactly. You don't need a big allotment. You know, you can grow a lot in just a couple of two or three square meters of ground or pots or and it's sort of first time people who have, you know.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Who might not have... It might not have grown any veggies. I mean, before I had my allotment and that one on the whole garden as well, which was, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I'd never grown, I mean, apart from some cress at school, I've never grown anything. And, you know, it was like, you're either an ornamental gardener or you grow edibles. It was one or the other. But actually, I mean, parsnips are a bit tricky, but most things just want to grow. And it doesn't matter what they look like. They taste so much better than anything you ever can ever buy, and that's what it's about, really.
And it's the variety you can get from growing yourself. There are so many. I mean, heritage vegetables have flown up lately. These old fashioned ones, and they're very useful as well, because like a lot of things, they're actually resistant to a lot of modern day pests, because what they were affected by aren't around anymore because they're gone, like all things that you could say about our friend COVID. He has to keep changing because, quite simply put, that's what viruses do. They have to change to survive. And as you say, and there's a lot of, I do like some of the old writers. Supermarkets grow things for supermarkets. They need to travel a long way and sit on the shelf for a while. Whereas we all know some vegetables, they're very, very precious. And that's it. You need to pick them and eat them. And that's it. So,
yeah, exactly. Cool. Exactly. But also with kids, you know, to get kids eating healthily and just getting grown a few bits and pieces, and they'll always try something that they've grown themselves. And it's a wonderful thing. I mean, I think there's nothing better than picking a sweet corn off of
sticking on the barbecue or something. I don't know how old your kids are, Joe. I've got two teenage girls. I think you can't force people to love it, if you get my meaning. But it's nice to give them the thing that maybe one day, and I often find a lot of people later in life say, oh, my dad used to do this, and I'd kind of never done it once I moved out. And then they kind of get back into it when they get a bit older, and they suddenly think they remember these things that their granddad did.
Yeah. Well, my son is a landscaper now, and he's on the list for the local allotments. You know, he's working, so he's desperate to get an allotment, which is great because he used to help me on the allotment in the old days. I became a grandfather 3 weeks
ago. Oh, congratulations.
So that's how old my son's 25.
So
I'm a granddad. I can't believe it.
Granddad Swift.
But you know, I can't wait to garden with my granddaughter. And my son's got it. Yeah, and my daughter, I know that, you know, she keeps saying, oh, we've got this little bit, you know, what should we do with this? And I've got to go round to her flat round the corner and give them some advice and stuff. But I'm hoping that it sticks with them. I mean, I used to garden with both my grandparents, you know, when I was
down here
a little bit. And with my mum, my dad wasn't really interested in gardening. No. But it's something that you pass down. And you go away from it and you come back to it and you go, you know, whatever. But I think it's sort of those basics really stick with you.
Yeah. That's actually one of my questions for you. Have you got any Joe Swift Jr.'s appearing? But you've already answered that by saying your son's a landscaper, so natural heir to the throne.
Yeah, he did mechanical engineering masters at Brighton. I was like, okay, great, Sam, you're going to be a mechanical engineer. And he said, no, Dad. He goes, I don't want to sit in front of a computer the rest of my life. That's what engineers do. He said, I want to be out on site. And I was like, okay. So he's working on the Battersea Power Station project. He's working for Willoughby Landscapes.
Yeah.
And commuting from Brighton to Battersea Power Station every morning. Got to be on site at 7:30.
That's fun. Oh,
he loves it. He's young. He loves it. Great. I'm like, wow, that sounds exhausting. But, you know, he really loves it.
To be honest, I had my hair cut yesterday. I thought, I'm appearing on with Joe. I better get my hair cut. I don't even show me how to do my hair.
Yeah, I did.
The lady there is, and she was actually saying that she wishes she had done something like that. And she's a bit older than me. I think she was in her mid-50s. But she said that wasn't really an option necessarily all those years ago. I went to Merris Wood in the 90s, very early 90s, late 80s. And it was only then really becoming the thing that gardeners, because I think some way seen before that, it was kind of like, well, you're not in the right sort of area and you just got to be an old boy just going along at the end of it. Whereas I said, nowadays, of course, there's so much opportunity in the world of horticulture.
Nowadays, you can go into, a lot of people want to be garden designers, but, you know, there's the landscaping side, there's nursery side, there's the science side. The RHS are constantly encouraging people to, there's so many different aspects of it. And we are short of gardeners, you know, we're good gardeners. But we're slightly undervalued good gardeners. Well, we don't quite get paid enough compared to other, plumbers and electricians and all that. I mean, it is a real skill and a huge amount of knowledge that goes into it. So we must, as a nation, the nation needs to value, we need to value our gardeners.
I think you're totally right. And there is space, as you say, there's lots of garden designers, lots of landscapers. I would say sometimes there's a real dearth of what we were saying earlier, the old kind of semi-retired chap or lady, to be fair. The people are calling out for them, but of course there's not enough of them because people don't necessarily want to do it. And a lot of it comes down to cost, as you say. You kind of think they're more of an hourly rate, but they're as important to some people because as much as plumbers and electricians give you great enjoyment because your house has got lights and warmth, gardens can probably give more enjoyment in that sense from your garden than anything. And it all just depends whether you appreciate it or not, I suppose.
Exactly. That's true.
Because I will say for your books, Joe, they're very nice. If I can, actually say they strike me. Have you got more planned, or has the publisher got more planned, I should say?
The publisher, I think there's potentially more in the series. It's a bit like a Netflix series.
Yes.
There's more there. I'm crazy busy this spring.
But maybe
in the autumn I might turn my attention to another couple.
I would say from my point of view, if I'm being honest, they remind me, they're like a very modern, updated version of a very famous set that I'm sure you and the publisher would love to have, because I'm sure they sold something like 60 million nearly, which would be the Garden Expert series by Dr. Hessian. But I do like these because they are different. They're similar, but different. And I know that Dr. Hessian did say that those sort of books don't really exist anymore. They've gone away because of the internet.
No, that's it. Well, you know that I was brought up on the Dr. Hessian books, and you know, I had the Lawn Expert, the Rose that's Expert, the, you know, and all that sort of stuff. With his drawings in
that's
there,
it.
And I used to refer to them all the time, and I want that practical. I want people to sort of have faith in the practical knowledge behind them, but you know, a little bit more inspirational. Because I think these days that we're not just thinking about, okay, I'm going to grow this rose bush. You're thinking of the bigger picture and the design and how you're going to use it in the garden and da 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 da. And then there's all the wildlife and the modern garden ways we garden. I'll take that as a compliment. And yeah, if I could a percentage of his 60 million worldwide, I'll be very happy with that.
I can see your publisher rubbing their hands already. No, it was totally meant as a compliment, as I say, because then unfortunately in this modern world we live in, you're ultimately always reinventing the wheel in a slightly different way, new spokes or anything. But I think they're lovely because you could leave them on your coffee table and pick them up and read them. I'm trying to think the nicest way to say this. You could actually used to be, as they used to say, a kind of a book you could leave in a toilet and you'd be surprised that people would sit. But, and I mean that in the nicest possible way, because you can actually look through it and think, oh, I had a problem. Like I'm just going through this one here and like Swiss chard. Maybe things people wouldn't know a lot about, but it's laid out so nicely in a beautiful typeface and everything that it's short and concise. And the next page is tomatoes. It's a kind of, you can pick it up and put it down and use it as a reference book without necessarily thinking, I don't know how many pages, what we've got, about 100 and 200 odd pages. I don't have to read it all the way through.
No.
Or read it all.
No, exactly.
I might read it in one bulk, and I think that's what's very nice about it.
that's the idea. You can dip in when it's relevant, and then, you know, you can start somewhere with them, and then, maybe a year later you go back. And also, you know, I thought things like the edible garden is, if you've sort of got a niece or a nephew or like my son, my son, if he gets his allotment, it'd just be absolutely perfect. Like a friend of mine's just got his first garden down in Devon. You know, I've sent him the whole set. That's you, Nico. I want thanks for that, by the way. And, he's never gardened it before in his life. I'm thinking, well, this is absolutely perfect. Stop him ringing me up every time.
Yeah, this is it.
But also, they're $9.99, so they're priced. You pick them up and you think, hang on. Okay, that's really, and you're not, I don't want the price to put people off. I just want people to think, that's great, exactly what I need, a tenner,
Well, also, because you've split it up as well, unlike a lot of books where they bizarrely could have, I've got them here. Thanks to your publisher for sending them, it's very kind. Okay. They haven't combined, they've not tried to do too much. You've actually separated them. So if somebody's not interested in growing plants in the house, which is fair enough, at least you can, and I think that's where the kind of, this sort of series of books does, because you can pick and choose what you want. Not everybody's interested in everything. And some people, as you say, I'm not interested in modern gardens, although I believe there's a lot that you don't have to have a modern garden to...
Some people might just be interested in getting more wildlife. Some people might not have a garden at all. They're just looking at the indoor plants, that's the idea. There's so many aspects to gardening, and you've got to sort of tailor-make it to work for the space that you've got and what you're into and where you want to go with it as well. And I totally appreciate that.
Yeah. And also, I must say, you've either got a very good collection, I'll bring it close to the camera there, of snazzy shirts and bands for your hat, or someone's been auto-chroming, I believe. But
They've been playing with Photoshop.
Yeah, they're
nice. I'm really pleased with the way they look. They're cool, aren't they?
Yeah, they're lovely. That's the first thing I know. I thought Joe's got some pretty out there shirts and hat bands. But, yeah. I'm guessing they told you just to wear a white shirt for it and put a white hat band.
No, it was my daughter took that photo.
And, all right.
They said, we need a photo of you. We've got a similar photo, but we wanted to...
Yeah.
Because I was like, I've got a beard. It was an old photo they had. And so she took that photo of me and they sent it, and they can do amazing things on Photoshop.
Oh yes, they can. I must admit, I was fiddling around on Zoom before you came on and realised that I can make myself look 10 years younger as a TV show says. But I believe they call soft focus. But I thought,
yeah, you can get one of those.
But you got no expression on your face. It's like you pulled a
pinful
away for it.
Yeah, you spot them on the telly. I know. Yeah. My missus is always going, No, their face isn't moving. They've got one of those filters on. Yeah.
Well, no, it's not the same, is it? I don't know. How were you affected by Storm Eunice the other day? Was it that bad in London or pretty blowy out here?
It was blowy. It wasn't too bad. I mean, you know, there's three branches down. I've got to get out there and prune a few things back. But no, there was a lot of blustering around. In fact, my neighbour's old pear tree came down, but it was already sort of rotten and covered in ivy. Yeah. But fortunately, it fell the other way and sort of took a bit of the fence out. But I've given him my tree surgeon's number. I think it's coming this weekend to chop it all up. But the thing about the city is that, you know, you've got
buildings to deflect it.
You've got but you've also got funneling. So, you know, if you get a really strong sort of storm and it funnels down a narrow street and there's no... Which is why we all should have more hedging and more plants to actually slow that down. But that will help
with flooding as well, Joe. The flooding. People don't realise when it hits a hard piece of concrete or a compacted piece of ground, it runs off, and that's what creates flooding. Water, as I always tell customers, one thing about water, I can guarantee you, it will go with gravity. It doesn't move uphill. It goes the easiest route downhill, and that's what you have to work with.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, I think, flash floods in the cities and they're going to get worse. And, the urban greening, we need to do much more of it. Slow it all down as it goes down into the drains or goes back into the ground, goes back into the water table.
Oh, that'd be the best thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So as a designer, have you noticed any trends? I think sort of this last couple of years with changing. Have you noticed more trends for people wanting to have allotments or growing areas at home for vegetables? What kind of trends have you noticed maybe have been happening or you can kind of see it going?
I think we're really valuing gardens and outdoor space now. And I think we're finally breaking away from breaking away from the lawn in the middle with all the plants around the outside and doing something a bit more exciting than that and really engaging with it. So I think wildlife is massive and rightly so. I mean, it's not a trend. It's just, it's an essential. And then there's sustainability aspect. You know, people don't want to go out there watering stuff all day, every day and trying to keep things alive. So I think, you know, we're much more interested in sort of creating environments and where plants can thrive rather than this is my favorite plant, I'm going to water it every day. I think go grow your own big. It's not just seen as someone who gardens or someone who doesn't. It's people who might not see themselves as a gardener, but still, you know, interested in plants and grow plants and
enjoy them.
Enjoy them. I think it's sort of been blown out. I think it's opened up a lot more, you know, than I'm a gardener. Oh, I'm not a gardener.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got a garden. No, I haven't got a garden. No. People are looking at different ways of just, you know, growing stuff. And I think
learning from our predecessors, our grannies and granddads and things like that, and things like a mulch is kind of like to a gardener. It's a kind of basic thing you do. But as people are starting to realise now that actually mulching, I mean, wood chip, I'm a bit about sometimes, but they all do the same thing. If you water a plant, if you keep watering a plant, it's not going to bother going looking for the water.
It's the same
with lawns. The lawn will always come back.
Yeah,
it'll go a bit brown, but it will always come back. But the bottom line is a lot of people, they not over, you can't, it's pretty hard to overwater. Well, you can overwater, depends on your conditions. But if you give it, sometimes you've got to give them a bit of hard love. because they have to go and look for the water. Because if you just if it's always on tap, what they're going to do? They'll be like your pet cat or dog. They'll just come back and go, "Where's my water?" Then, and when it doesn't come, they'll be like,
Yeah, and I know. I think we learn. We are working with the environment, with the plants, and we're more relaxed. When I first started gardening, it was all stripes on lawns and getting the edging shears out. And you know, the minute a plant was over, you know, perennial, you chop it back,
deadhead it.
And now we embrace, you know, the decay of plants, the beauty of decay through the winter. The natural rhythms of the seasons, and it's all so sterile and clean out in your garden. You just don't you don't experience that. You know, you don't see that. You see it in the park, but you won't see it in your garden. Well, our gardens are the place to, and that is only beneficial to wildlife. And we, you know, it's a sort of big cycle that we all get involved in. So I think gardening has sort of become more of a process that we're all involved in, rather than, oh, I've got a lovely garden. Yes. It's like, no, I'm engaged in my garden. That's what I am. I'm engaged in my garden, the seasons and the whole thing. And that's a brilliant thing. It's a lovely thing because that's what we are. You know, we know how great it is.
Well,
it's evangelical.
Yeah, I've got the battle with my wife when I, when I moved in, the house, he's done a lovely job on the house, the builder, but unfortunately he's a builder. So we all know what they know about gardening. And I left some bluebells in. I did put down a new lawn because it didn't have one. And of course they kind of come through the lawn and my wife wants me to just cut them off, whereas I'd rather just leave that a bit of a long area. But it's a bit like you saying earlier, when you're, I do it for a living and that, but I've got children, they're teenagers and they're only just getting out of bed, I can hear. And things like that, but you have to balance it. It's not just my garden. There's obviously I share it with the creatures, well, the birds and the bees and all the insects, and I do share it with my wife and kids and things like that.
That's the
fun thing about designing, is actually finding a way to try and keep everybody happy. Oh well, we know it will never quite be a perfect a split, but
exactly. But is there something for everyone out there? Is that, you know, you can garden it, you can look at it, you can be out in the space. It's got to be versatile for the kids, and you know, when you have people around, whatever it might be, you know, that we want a lot from our garden spaces. But they're alive. You know, they're not like a living room or a kitchen. They're alive,
and they're constantly changing. They're affected by things that we have no control over, and that's, I think, part of the fun of gardening is actually. Yeah. Trying to work with what you've worked. You have to work with what you give them. You can't force it.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have an allotment? Do you have an allotment at home? I know your son's trying for one. Have you got a little veg growing area, Joe, at home?
I've got a very small veg.
It doesn't matter. It's a growing area nonstop. What's your favourite thing to grow, do you think? That you like picking straight out of the ground?
I do like carrots. I mean, you can't beat a potato.
I mean, when
you're talking about, you know, I know it's very, very simple, but I love a potato. But I just like sort of cut and come again salads as well.
Yes.
Because they're so easy. And, you know, going off to the supermarket, those plastic bags, they drive me mad.
They're lovely, aren't
just,
they?
And you just a handful, you know, scissors, snip, 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 you know, give it a water and you get, you know, three or four.
Yeah, you don't always want a whole bag of lettuce.
No, you don't want a whole bag of lettuce, and the whole plastic thing is really doing my head in, the single-use plastic. And herbs. I like herbs. You know, just being able to go out and pick some herbs and fresh herbs rather than dried herbs.
Actually, I'm very lucky. I'm off to. I spoke to Jekka McVicker the other day, and I'm off to visit her in April and go and see her herbarium and things. So I'm looking forward to that because I love herbs. And in our chat, she taught me an awful lot about things about herbs and that because I said the old question about, what's your kind of herb starter kit? And she straight away came back with, there is no such thing as a herb starter kit.
Yeah.
What do you like to eat? It's no point growing lots of things. If you don't, same with all vegetables, there's no point going, look at these fabulous aubergines and things I've grown. Do you eat them?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Well, then there's actually no point in really growing them. They look nice and it might look great on Instagram or something.
But
you really need to grow what you eat. And no one likes everything. And obviously a lot of people probably lie and say they do and they never do eat it. But I grow what I eat. So it may not be the most expansive plot.
Yeah.
And I grow, I can't claim to eat Swiss chard a lot, but I think it's pretty. So I'll do a little pot of it just to kind of colour up the allotment. But it's knowing what you eat. And that's how we'll cut down on wastage? Because I think that's a bigger problem. There's often people say, oh, there's too many people, we can't grow enough to feed the world. Well, we probably can, but we absolutely waste too much. And that's,
well, that's
the problem.
True. Yeah,
and they sell things like wonky carrots now in some supermarkets. And I'm like, it's just a carrot. They don't all come out kind of like this long and perfectly straight and nothing. And I think letting people know that actually vegetables, like humans, are imperfectly perfect, I suppose.
Yeah, totally.
And that's some way of getting around to it.
Agree.
Right, you're an ambassador for the National Garden Scheme. I think there's another thing that I think people have maybe started to appreciate a little bit more, the little yellow book that comes out for your local area.
Yeah. Well, I was the president before I handed over to Mary Berry. So I was the president for 6 years. I love the National Garden Scheme. It's where I did a lot in the early days when I first got into gardening. I would, you know, go around the local gardens and look at what people were growing. And talk to the homeowner and just sort of, you know, just tap into that knowledge.
It's
a wonderful thing. And then the significant amount of money that is raised for nursing charities mainly. Brilliant.
I think they're probably the, in many ways, if they're local to you, they're probably, you'll get more knowledge from those, some might say, but their expertise will probably be more relevant to you than a book sometimes, because they know your local area, they know your local soil.
Exactly, they know your soil, they know what grows, and you can just get so much info about, you know, where to buy stuff locally and, you know, maybe source a load of mulch or whatever it might be cheaply, but also just for inspiration. And I think, you know, gardeners who have spent, you know, years developing a really lovely garden want to share it. They want to share it, you know, especially if it's just, you know, a sort of residential garden, you know, behind a, you know, a house or whatever. No one gets to see it unless they open it and let people in. And I think there's still a misconception about the NGS. People don't know that money goes to great charities. Some people think their owner's pocketing the money themselves.
No.
They're not, you know. So it's just a total win-win situation. Fantastic. Yeah.
It's their enthusiasm sometimes. It will make you want to come and garden, because as you say, they might be 30, 40 years old and they could be in their 90s, but their actual enthusiasm to actually get out and do something, maybe not what you once could do, but it's amazing thing. So I'll shoot my researcher, which is actually me, and I'll shoot them for not knowing you were president, actually. That's it, I'm sacked.
I was president for 6 years. Obviously.
6 years, right, that's it. We'll put that at the top. I'll re-edit it later to say President Joe Swift. Chelsea's back on again this year in its normal slot. Now, I know I chatted to Chris Beardshaw, and he's back with the RLNI.
That's right.
You're a gold medal winner there, Joe, I think back in 2012. Are we like to see you turn up in that guise? I mean, we know you're going to turn up at Chelsea, but you're more of the public face of it.
Well, you've got to watch this space, because I might be there in another capacity, but I can't say what yet. But I am planning something, but it's not a sponsored garden, shall we say. But there's something in the making. So I probably will be there. Doing something else there from a design perspective.
I'm excited by this, Joe, because believe it or not, I've never actually been to Chelsea or Hampton.
All right.
I've been to Hampton Court, but I've never been to the shows. But courtesy of writing in the Kitchen Garden magazine, I'm obviously going to do some reports on it for them. So hopefully I can pop along on press day to both of them. So hopefully.
Oh, it's a wonderful thing. Yeah. And it's going to be packed. This year it's packed. I mean, you know, there's so many gardens. It's sort of back up to full capacity as far as, I mean, September last year was great, because the weather was amazing. It's like an Indian summer. It's a celebration of everybody being, you know, out of lockdown and everything. But I'm looking forward to it being in May.
I think a lot of people are. It's exciting.
It's a big show.
Well, it'd be nice to actually, all these people I've interviewed over the last couple of years, I've never actually met any of them. They've all said, I'd love to see you there. And that's the best place where they're all grouped together, quite simply put.
That is what's nice about it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, from our perspective in the industry, to sort of, you know, be surrounded by other gardeners and your old mates and people that you've met.
It's exactly what my editor said. He says it's as much a social event as it is in a kind of celebration of gardening and garden design. And I used to notice the kind of main sponsors, not a big bank or anything this year. I think is it the Newt in Somerset?
It's the Newt.
Which is interesting and nice, because I know for many years it was a don't know whether they're a bank, but you know, the investors were.
No, big. It was a bank. Yeah, it was a bank. Yeah, it was a hedge fund. Yeah,
it's a hedge fund investors. Yeah, whereas it's actually quite nice that a relatively smaller place in comparisons is actually kind of the main sponsor and the face of it. I've never been there, but it sounds like a lovely place to go and visit.
Oh, it's great. Oh, it's great. It's great fun. You know, it's great fun. And you get gardeners and non-gardeners, people into design, people just want a great day out and all that sort of stuff. And filming there for the week. You know, I'm there with Carol and Monty and Adam. And, you know, for us, it's really good fun as well. It's exhausting.
I think it comes across with that, though, to be fair. Because last year, you're high up, kind of above at the end of a part, as I say. And you seem to enjoy it. I mean, there's a smile on... Oh, we love it. It's not like, this is drudgery.
No, we love it. We love it. It's by the end of the week, it's like you need to go and lie down in a dark room for a few hours. But it's really good fun. Yeah.
Yeah, they probably won't let you do that, unfortunately, some of these show gardens. No. You're not sitting down in it.
No. Yeah. No, it's true.
That's cool. And obviously you did Horatio's Garden for the Spoke Mandeville as well. That was a lovely thing to be involved in, I imagine. And it looks fantastic too.
Yeah, that's the most important garden I've ever designed, I would say. You know, the Horatio's for the spinal unit, Spoke Mandible, they're doing more and more. I mean, I think there's 11 spinal units in the UK and they're up to number 5 or 6 at the moment. And they're designing, Andy Sturgeon is a friend of mine, he's designing the one in Northern Ireland. But it's just the most amazing charity to see the garden you've designed. You know, populated by people in wheelchairs and beds with spinal injuries, getting outside of the hospital, sterile, understandably sterile hospital environment, into a garden surrounded by plants and connecting with their families and friends. They've been through incredible trauma. And it just, you know, it just shows you how nature can help heal and, you know, help take one outside of oneself. And, you know, it's very humbling and overwhelming, the response, I have to say, to the garden. And it's great. It's been a great project to work on.
Yeah. Right, now Joe, your dad and in fact your uncle were both actors, weren't they? And your mum is a novelist, I'm right from right in thinking. Right, a playwright maybe as well.
She's a novelist.
Yeah. So where did Joe Swift, how did he end up being a gardener and not going into the acting world?
Well, He dropped out of art school. He was in a band. He's a bass player in a band.
Oh, and I was a bass player for many years. Oh, that's what I like to hear.
Yeah,
so I was people in a band, if you ask me.
So I was in a band. The band fell to pieces. I went off to Australia and landscaped in Australia. Started working for a landscaping company out there. And then came back to the UK and just wanted a job, started working for a local gardening company. And so I didn't go to university and got into it that way. This is a sort of about 1920, just got into it and just absolutely loved it.
You're still into your art though, because I do watch you, I do follow your Instagram account and like doing some coffee art, I believe you could call it.
Yeah, it's a bit random. I think the word's random these days. Sometimes I do it, sometimes I don't. And it's the only thing I'm a snob about is coffee. I like to make a nice cup of coffee. I can't do instant, and I like to make my own cup of coffee. And I'm not a snob about anything else apart from I like a nice cup of coffee. Yeah. And I only like one a day. People think I'm a coffee addict or something. No, that's not what it's about.
I just like seeing your pictures.
Anyway, it's fun. It started in lockdown. And as we were all going a bit crazy. And I got into it. So, carried it on a bit.
It's another revenue stream for you, if you ask me, Joe. I think it's a fun little thing. It's certainly a bit up on the old Shamrock and a pint of Guinness that I used to do when I was when I was younger. Might take you a bit longer. That's the problem, though. If people say, what I would like is...
what I'd like is one of these.
Cool. Yeah. Fair enough. Well, that'd be lovely. Thanks for joining me. And I'll
Daniel. I'll
speak to you soon.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you. I'll
see
you in
at Chelsea.
Yeah, hopefully in person. That'd be good. Lovely. Cheers, Joe. Thank you.
Cheers.
See you later. Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you can subscribe to Kitchen Garden Prime for just $4.99 per month. You'll be getting a whole lot for your plot, including an easy-read tablet and phone edition to read anywhere, anytime. exclusive access to 10 years of digital back issue archives, access to exclusive content from the online allotment, the Mudketeers website, plus the monthly print magazine will be delivered free to your door each month. Head to classicmagazines.co.uk/KGPrime to sign up today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.